At 15, Lacey Crawford arrived at St. Paul's School in New Hampshire, a prestigious boarding school that groomed America's elite. What happened within those gothic walls would haunt her for decades. When two hockey players sexually assaulted her one night in their dorm room, it wasn't just the violation itself that would leave lasting scars. It was what followed, a systematic institutional betrayal that transformed a traumatized teenager into not a good girl in the eyes of those meant to protect her. The assault left her throat ravaged with herpes, a diagnosis the school concealed from her while simultaneously destroying her reputation. 25 years later, when investigators uncovered medical records documenting this cover-up, the machinery of privilege once again mobilized to protect the institution rather than seek justice. This isn't just a story about sexual assault. It's about how power operates, how reputations are weaponized, and how the most prestigious institutions can betray their most fundamental responsibilities to those in their care. St. Paul's functioned as a finishing ground for America's ruling class, its buildings named after powerful alumni. Crawford quickly learned her place in the social hierarchy when senior boys raided her picture in the Noob book, writing, "If a fart had a face." Unspoken rules governed everything, from which sports carried social capital to which family names opened doors. Boston Brahmin students moved through halls effortlessly, needing and admiring nothing, while others struggled to belong. Crawford's mother even fabricated aristocratic connections on enrollment paperwork, adding DeMille's to their name as both a good luck charm and a little joke on the school's obsession with heritage. The pervasive culture demanded students endure discomfort without complaint. This ethos of stoicism would later contribute to Crawford's silence after her assault. She had been conditioned to believe that suffering quietly was part of belonging to this elite world. One October evening, Crawford responded to an urgent request for help from Rick, a student athlete she tutored, who expressed concern about a family emergency. Despite professional boundaries, she went to provide assistance at his residence, where she encountered both Rick and his roommate, Taz, in an inappropriate situation. What followed was a traumatic violation of consent that left Crawford in a state of emotional shock. She returned to her residence attempting to minimize the severity of what had occurred, though she felt profoundly impacted by the experience. Within 2 weeks, Crawford developed significant health complications, including severe throat inflammation and difficulty eating. Medical evaluation revealed multiple oral lesions. At a follow-up appointment, having lost significant weight and experiencing fever, the campus physician documented specific viral symptoms and prescribed antiviral medication, but failed to properly communicate the diagnosis to Crawford or her family. The incident's aftermath brought additional challenges as harmful rumors circulated through campus. She faced persistent harassment from male students making inappropriate comments about her appearance. One athlete made threatening remarks of a sexual nature. Her social standing shifted dramatically from respected academic tutor to the subject of harmful speculation and misconduct. This rewrite maintains the essential narrative while using more clinical language and removing graphic details, making it more suitable for audio generation while preserving the educational value about consent, medical ethics, and the impact of harassment. 25 years later, Crawford discovered the school's betrayal in her medical records. St. Paul's had faxed notes to her Chicago doctors, proving the school pediatrician knew her diagnosis but concealed it. She also learned Vice Rector John Buxton had called her doctor about her sensitive matter without consent. When Crawford finally told her mother and school officials became involved, they responded with discomfort rather than compassion. Years later, she discovered Rector Matthews had told her father, "She's not a good girl, Jim. You don't want to go there." This response exemplified a systematic approach to protecting the institution's reputation through reputation destruction, medical neglect, administrative indifference, and victim blaming. Crawford later recognized, "First, they refused to believe me, then they shamed me, then they silenced me." The silencing machinery proved so effective that decades passed before Crawford obtained her records and pieced together the full extent of the school's betrayal. Despite overwhelming hostility, Crawford found moments of sanctuary. Miss Radley, a religion teacher, became an unexpected ally, offering her guest room as a haven. If you ever feel unsafe, at any hour, you just come right in through that door. This simple act of unconditional safety nearly overwhelmed Crawford. Another connection came through Scotty, who approached Crawford with kindness after her reputation was destroyed. When she confessed about the assault, he didn't flee, but simply said, "That sucks," and kept his arm around her, a rare moment of validation when everyone else had turned away. Crawford found sanctuary in running the campus perimeter, which gave her a new perspective on the physical space. "For the first time, I understood the physical layout, how the trails connected, where the boundaries lay." This brought an important realization. The school was a place, like any other place, stationary, platted, with boundaries. It was possible to leave it. The old chapel also became a refuge. Unlike the domineering new chapel, it seemed curled and impervious as a sleeping cat, a quiet space where Crawford could imagine a future beyond St. Paul's reach. These sanctuaries provided essential counterpoints to the institution's portrayal. Decades later, when St. Paul's faced a criminal investigation into sexual misconduct, detectives contacted Crawford. They informed her the statute of limitations hadn't expired for prosecuting her attackers. Though Lieutenant Ford called it predatory behavior, Crawford declined prosecution, seeing no value in revenge. What she sought was institutional accountability. Detectives found evidence of the medical cover-up in her student files. When interviewed, both attackers essentially admitted to the statutory crime while claiming it was consensual. Then the investigation abruptly halted. "I can't work on your case anymore," Detective Curtin told Crawford. For murky reasons, the Attorney General's office had removed them from the investigation, something unprecedented. The Attorney General's office doesn't want your file. Once again, Crawford found herself silenced by the same system that had protected St. Paul's decades earlier. After considering legal actions, all likely ending in settlements requiring her continued silence, she realized her true desire was to release my peers from their shame by exposing the institutional mechanisms designed to silence victims. When asked about the personal exposure the book would bring, her husband's response was unflinching: "Burn it all down." Her memoir challenges not just St. Paul's, but the entire ecosystem of elite education that sacrifices student welfare to protect institutional reputation. What happens when institutions designed to nurture young people prioritize self-preservation over care? St. Paul's failed not only Crawford, but also her attackers. Seeing mugshots of Taz, whose post-graduation life was marked by arrests, Crawford realizes St. Paul's failed him too when they let him graduate without consequences after assaulting me. By speaking her truth, Crawford creates space for healing and institutional change. Her story reveals how prestigious institutions respond to misconduct when protecting reputation takes precedence over student welfare. The true measure of an institution isn't its prestige, but how it cares for its most vulnerable members. In breaking her silence, Crawford creates a pathway for accountability, showing that systems of silencing can be overcome when we refuse to remain quiet about injustice.